Very good. Welcome to now. And yesterday I really focused on present moment awareness. Hopefully that you have developed a little bit of present moment awareness, and hopefully you can cultivate it even more. So always remind yourself of where you are, right here, right now. The breakfast is a long time ago. The lunch is a long time in the future. Even just whatever you plan to do next doesn't exist. And if you can develop the perception that the past is not real and the future doesn't exist, and stay in the present moment just that much, will give you a lot of peace, a lot of letting go, and your meditation will really take off. Very simple, but very effective. Unfortunately, that people want lots and lots of instructions on meditation, and they listen to so many talks, they read so many books, they go to so many retreats, their poor old mind gets so confused. And it gets so confused, they don't know what to do, except think of which is the right meditation to do. So instead of thinking so much, simple teachings come into this present moment. And I've been teaching this for such a long time, and find that it's almost a totally sufficient teaching in and of itself, just to be here, and to be even more fully here. So much so that sometimes in the deeper stages of meditation, say when you know you are in the deep stages, when you've got a nimitta coming up and it's not really coalescing, it's not getting brilliant and giving you the bliss, sometimes I stop and just go back to that present moment awareness. What I describe it as is that, you know, you're taking a photograph with a camera and it's just slightly out of focus, just slightly out of focus. And that's enough to stop the progress of stillness. And all you need to do is to turn it a tiny little bit and everything gets sharp again. And that's basically one of the methods I use in the deeper stages of meditation, just sharpening the focus in this present moment. So it really is right here, right now, and not even a millisecond into the future, not even a microsecond into the past. Or now let's make it even more accurate, even a femtosecond, which is even less. a Planck second. Because a Planck second is the smallest amount of time. It's like the quantum limit. Beyond that, or less than that, time has no meaning. It's about 10 to the minus 26 seconds or something, if I remember correctly. You may correct me on that. But beyond that, shorter than that, time has absolutely no meaning at all. Because, you know, the quantum uncertainty kicks in, and you can't really say anything. So, not even a Planck second into the future, let alone a Planck second into the past. You're really focused in this very, very moment. And the reason we emphasize this is because once you're in this present moment, a lot of the other obstacles to meditation, they just can't get to you. You know, you've actually shut the door to them. All craving, all wanting, all aspiration, it does need a perception of the future. Some idea that you can get somewhere, you can move into some future existence. And when that is taken away from you, just craving has just got no place to grab hold of you. It's just like trying to write a plan in the air, and you just can't do it. Or trying to have like a, what they used to call the sky hooks. You can't hook anything into the air, nothing sticks to it. So this is what happens when you really come very deeply into the present moment. One of the practices to do this is a very hard practice, but it's one you'll do two or three times every day, eating or having a cup of tea. Try the present moment awareness when you're eating. You know what happens, you can look around you, and you can see that somebody has got a spoon of rice in their spoon, ready to put in their mouth. But they can't put it in there yet because they're already chewing something already in the mouth. And they've also got the next bundle of rice. You can see them messing around with their plate, organizing it. So that's number three. And after that one, this is number four. They're usually at least two or three spoons ahead of themselves. So see if you can practice present moment awareness when you're eating by just putting one spoon of food into your mouth, chewing it and being aware that you're chewing it, swallowing it, and only once it's swallowed, only then start to think about what you're going to eat next. Don't be one or two spoons ahead of yourself. Don't even be half a spoon ahead of yourself. You eat, enjoy this particular morsel of food, and once it's swallowed, then start scraping together another morsel of food to put in your mouth. Simple teaching, but it really gets you trained into being here. And number two, people asked me about the walking meditation yesterday. Again, present moment awareness is number one. So when you start the path, you know I am here, the beginning of the path, starting to do some meditation. And as you're walking, you're not looking to where you're going to go to. As I say, one of the great advantages of walking meditation is you don't get anywhere. You start at this end, you go over there, and you come back again. You always end up where you started from. That's why it's absolutely useless. You don't get anywhere in walking meditation, which is brilliant. That's the whole point of it. To stop this idea of trying to get somewhere. Trying to get somewhere in your meditation. Get somewhere in life. Reach the goals. You all know that once you reach one goal, there's another goal to reach afterwards. That's what I discovered with academic work. I could have gone on to do all sorts of PhDs and stuff. I was clever enough. But I realized what was going on. I started my O-levels, and if you pass your O-levels, then you have to do another exam called the A-levels. If you pass your A-levels, then you have to do another exam called a bachelor's degree. If you pass your bachelor's degree, then you have to do a master's degree. If you do a master's degree, you have to do a PhD degree. If you pass your PhD degree, you have to do other postgrad degrees. You only stop when you fail. So when you fail an exam, you're free at last. So when I figured that out, I wish I'd have failed my O-levels. Then I'd be actually free much earlier in life. Because it's always going on to the next stage. And that's just an example in academia. You can always increase your qualifications, can't you? Even if you've got double PhD and Nobel Prize, there's still another course you can do. Another peak to reach in life. And you keep on, many people keep on doing that in life. There's always another goal to reach in life. So they're never ever here. They're always the next thing to achieve. They even have these, I read it in the newspapers, these wish lists. The 40 things to do before you die. Now that is absolutely un-Buddhist, un-meditation. What do you mean 40 things to do before you die? You might die right this next moment. So the one thing to do before you die is to cross off all those 40 things and to say they're totally useless. That's not the point of life. You know, being able to climb Mount Everest or see the Great Wall of China or do a meditation retreat with Ajahn Brahm. That's not one thing. I've done that now I can do something else. Don't say I've got to get jhana before I die. I've got to be enlightened before I die. All of that is like more wish lists. And that misses the whole point of what we're doing here. No wish lists. Take them all in a piece of paper. You can do this if you wish today. Write down your wish list, the 40 things you wish to do before you die. Write them on a piece of paper. And again, the piece of paper which is readily available in each one of your cottages is the toilet paper. Write down the 40 things you wish to do before you die. Have a look at it, realize how stupid it is, and then put it in the toilet and flush it. And it's done, it's finished. You've completed your 40 things. There's no business you have to do anymore. You're free, which means you can be in this moment. You've arrived. As I said on the first talk, that's the great thing. When a person has finally, they've got into the national soccer team. Or they've made their first million. They are now famous. At last, you've arrived. But people have to work so hard to arrive. I'll show you the easy way to arrive. Get rid of all your wishes and all your aspirations, and then you find, my goodness, I've already arrived. I'm already here. Why didn't anyone tell me about that a long time ago? I'm already here. So that present moment awareness is important. So walking meditation. As soon as you start the walking meditation, I've arrived. When you got the first step, I've arrived. At the first step of meditation. The second step, I've arrived. Always be here. The point of the walking meditation and the sitting meditation and the eating meditation and the sleeping meditation, everything else you do in this retreat, is to be here. Not to get somewhere, but to be here. Not to get somewhere, but to be here. So what's the point of meditation? Pardon? This is standard re-education camp teachings. Brainwashing. The purpose is to be here. Yes, Ajahn Brahm, the purpose is to be here. One day I'll achieve that. No, because my job is to cut away all that other stuff of trying to get somewhere else. So you start the meditation, present moment awareness, just being here. How simple can that be? Because what should I be doing? Being here. What should I be focusing on? Whatever's here. That's what you focus on. So if you're coughing, you focus on coughing. That's here. If someone leaves a mobile phone on, you focus on a mobile phone ringing. You don't go, they shouldn't bring a mobile phone into the retreat. They shouldn't be doing this, they shouldn't be doing that. The mobile phone only makes a little noise. In your head, that's where the great noise is. So be careful. In here is where the real noise begins. Outside is just the world. In here is the suffering. So, you start walking. Now, a little sort of some tricks of walking meditation. It's always useful to put your gaze about 2 meters ahead on the floor. Or actually, on the carpets in there. Do you see how kind we are to all of you? We give you red carpets to walk on. That's how much we value walking meditation. It is literally strutting the red carpet. So you strut the red carpet in those walking meditation rooms. The red carpets, I think one of the rooms has got the orange carpets, which as you see from my monk's robes, is much higher than the red carpet. Only those elite walking meditators should use the orange carpet. The rest of you, just the red carpet. No, you can use whatever carpets you want. But 2 meters ahead, put your eyes down so you're watching the carpet. All that does is get rid of the idea of fear. That, you know, am I going to step on something or trip on something? So you see the wall coming before it hits you. So you keep your eyes open, but just 2 meters. Not looking at the left, not looking at the right. Especially you're not looking at the other people doing walking meditation. Because if you do, sometimes it becomes a competition. Especially who can walk meditation the slowest. So the person sitting next to you, they're going too fast, I have to really slow down as well. Because sometimes in Buddhist meditation, especially in Vipassana retreats, now they do the slow walking. And they think the slower you walk, the closer you are to enlightenment. And sometimes I see it's a competition in there. And who can walk the slowest? Which is absolutely crazy. You walk natural. To be natural, you don't look to the left, you don't look to the right, you don't care what other people are doing. This is your walking path. You stick to your path 2 meters ahead. In the present moment, I'm here, right now. And what's going on in my mind right now? You're just aware of it. Not trying to get rid of it. Not trying to be attached to it, but just being with it. Treating it like a friend. During this retreat, I'll talk a lot about loving kindness meditation. If you get very upset and very tense and have a lot of difficulty, please borrow the teddy bear and sit meditation with the teddy bear so that it brings you some nice loving kindness. If ever you're getting a bit tired, fed up and angry, this is what the teddy bear is here for. So it's here waiting for whoever wishes to make use of teddy bear meditation. And what that means is when you're meditating, you're a friend to the present moment. Now the idea, the perception of a friend, of a Kalyana Mitta, the Buddha said, good friendship is 100% of this life, the religious life. Being a good friend to the present moment means you don't try and control it. Nor do you tell it what to do. Sometimes you may have a friend like that. This is the usual simile which I give. A friend calls you up and say, I know you've got a free afternoon. Please come and have a cup of coffee. And you will not go to Starbucks or Gloria Jean's. You will go to Dome. Because I like going to Dome coffee shop. And you will not have a cappuccino or a latte. You'll have a short black because that's what I like. And you won't put sugar or honey in your coffee. I know you like that because that's bad for your health. And you will have a muffin, not a biscuit, because I like muffins, and chocolate, and not sort of any other type of banana bread muffin or anything else. And we'll sit in the table in the corner, which is my favorite table, not out on the street like you would like to sit. And we will talk about Christianity, not about Buddhism. I know you're a Buddhist, but I'm not, so we'll talk about what I want to talk about. And we'll sit there for 2 hours, not an hour and a half, not 2.5 hours, because that's the time I like to sit. And if somebody calls you up like that, and they make all those demands on sharing an afternoon with them, what would your response be? You'd say, I'm sorry, I'm busy. I'm sorry, I've got to see my mother. I'm sorry, you think of something you have to do to get out of going, because who wants to spend time with a control freak? Do you get the message? Your mind doesn't want to spend any time with you. Because all you say, come on, mind, let's do some walking meditation. What do you mean? Now you're going to walk mindfully. You're going to 2 meters in front. You're not going to think of all those things. You're not going to think of this thing. You're not going to sort of do anything. You're just going to watch every movement in your feet. You're going to do it very slow, not fast. I don't care if you want to go fast. You're going to go slow because that's what I want you to do. No wonder the mind wanders off. For many people, even when you start meditating, the mind thinks, oh God, she wants me to meditate. I've been through that before. I'm busy. I've got to go to sleep. I've got to think of, I've got to think of something. Anything to get away from this control freak guy who keeps on wanting me to meditate. Hope you get the message here. But if it's your friend gives you a call, hey, are you free this afternoon? How about coming for a cup of coffee? Where do you want to go? Say, look, I've found this really good coffee shop just around the back of North Beach somewhere. Really good coffee. Really? Oh, I'll try that out. And, your friend says, now, what do you want to, which coffee do you have? He said, well, I really like lattes. I never had that latte before. I think I'll try what you like. And what do you want to talk about? And I want to talk about sort of Buddhism. I'm a Christian. I'm interested in that. Come and tell me what you do when you go on all these retreats. And now, how long do you want to stay for? If it's your friend, say for an hour and a half. And then you find yourself 2.5 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, you're sitting in the coffee shop. Because that's what it's like being with a friend. Time flies by, you're having such a good time. And sometimes, you don't want to leave. Because you're with a friend who's caring for you. And doesn't tell you what to do. But is interested in you, in sharing the time together as a friend. Now that's the attitude we have to meditation. It doesn't matter what you're experiencing, whether you're having a latte, a cappu, a short black, a flat white. What else do they have? That's pretty good so far. Shows I've been to a coffee shop or two in my time as a monk. But then you want to hang out with your friend. Then the mind wants to hang out with you. You don't get restlessness or sleepiness. Because you have friendship with this moment. So if you make this moment a friend, hey, present moment, what's going on? What's up? And you hang out with the present moment. You don't try and control it. Somebody's phone goes off.
Fine, it's present moment awareness. Thank you so much for bringing me back to the moment. Somebody coughs. Somebody falls over. Whatever. It brings you back to this moment. You're here. And you're a friend to this moment, no matter what it is. So you're not selecting and choosing what you're aware of. Whatever's happening in this present moment, you're opening the door of your heart to it. Interested in life. A friend to this moment. Just listening, not always talking back. With that friendship to the present moment stays. And just like when you first start talking to someone, it takes a little while to be comfortable together. But after a while, the present moment and you are just such inseparable friends. You hang out together for hours. And all the perceptions of the future and the past disappear. Just like when you're having a good cup of coffee with your friend, all the things which you should be doing, you forget about. Because you're having fun, chilling out with your best mate. The present moment. With that attitude, it's easy. If you're trying to force the mind, I've got to be in the present moment, come on, be in the present moment, no past. I've seen you coming past, you're in big trouble. If you come again, I'm going to hit you. Future look, how many times have I told you not to sort of come into my mind? I'm supposed to be in the present moment. Future look, I've had enough with you. If that is your attitude, that's when you get headaches. That's when you get suffering. That's when things don't work and you think, I can't meditate, you give up. And please don't do that. Meditation is a beautiful thing if you do it properly. It's so easy. So if you get that idea, the method, the understanding, it's so easy to do. So you're walking there, just walking in the present moment, walking backwards and forwards, nothing to do in the whole world, not trying to achieve jhana, not trying to get enlightened, not trying to get some great insights, totally free, nothing to do in the whole world. Have you had those moments where you've got nothing to do? No jobs, no appointments, nothing to do except just to enjoy this moment. Actually, it brings back a very early memory. I must have been about 12 or 13. And at the school which I was at, it was a very good school. I got a scholarship to go there, the top school in West London. And they used to have, like, twice a term, what they used to call merit halves. As long as you didn't, you know, get into trouble with the teachers. You know, if you did, you had these detentions on the half-day holiday, which all the other kids had. And I, in the lunchtime, instead of playing soccer, because only a little bit of homework to do, I went to the library and did all my homework. And so after lunch, I had nothing to do. A 12 and 13 year old kid, no homework to do, no appointments, nothing which I needed to do in the whole world. And I remember that moment. I felt so free walking out with nothing to do, nowhere to go. I could do whatever I wanted. No plans. You felt freedom. When was the last time you felt that in your life? Getting up in the morning, nothing to do. No list of things you had to achieve. No emails you had to send. No phone calls. No letters you had to write. No cleaning which you had to do. That's what happens here. The only two things you have to do when you woke up this morning is eat breakfast and eat lunch. That's the only two things in your schedule. Everything else is free. Okay. Now, can you get your head around how that feels? Peaceful, calm, liberated from the prison of time and things which you have to do. That's what walking meditation does. You're not trying to get anywhere. You're not trying to achieve anything. You've got no goals, nothing to tick off, I have to achieve this. You're just walking, just being here, and enjoying this body just moving. So that present moment awareness and being a friend to the present moment awareness, that is the fundamental. You just do that and actually everything else is very easy. But there is another stage of meditation. Just, these aren't things you try and achieve. These are not goals you set. Oh, I've got this first stage of meditation. I'm in the present moment. Now what do I do next? Remember, next. There is no next. Only the now. The next is just the imaginary concept. Now, now, now. So if everything, what should I do next? Stop it. Forget it. You've lost the plot. Now is the only time you have on this retreat. What happens if you start getting into the present moment and it starts getting more and more solid? Things become quiet. You're settling down. And the inner conversation stops. You're silent. Just like that. Isn't that awesome? Peace at last. The inner conversation stops. Silence. Isn't that beautiful? No more words. No more thinking. You're just alive and aware. Much closer to reality than any thought can ever reach. Thinking is a signpost. It's not the destination. It points to something. But there's so many signposts on the road. We never even see the road. All we see are signposts. That's like the old simile, which is the best I could offer. The professor and the restaurant. Once there was a professor of philosophy, and that professor managed to find out there was a 5-star restaurant opening in the city where he lived. He rang up the restaurant to book a table and found he had to wait for 2 months before he'd get a reservation. And when he managed to get the reservation, 2 months' time, he dressed in a fine suit and he appeared at the restaurant. And when he appeared at the restaurant, they had to check his ID to make sure he had the reservation, which he did. So the maitre d' led him to his table. And it was such a plush restaurant with incredible decor, chandeliers and beautiful mahogany tables with silverware and with a chandelier and just very beautifully upholstered chairs. It was the sort of thing you'd expect in the best restaurants of the world. And the butler came, it was a waiter, but it was dressed like a butler, to give him the menu. On thick card, written in not just ordinary words, it was like calligraphy in gold lettering, just beautiful. Even the menu was a work of art. And the professor said thank you to the waiter and proceeded to eat the menu. And when he'd finished swallowing the last piece of the menu, he got up and paid his bill and left, because the professor didn't understand the difference between the menu and the food. Even though you've heard that before, it's just a great story, because that actually tells you why people aren't wise. All they ever listen to is menus. There are many monks. They're experts on Abhidhamma, just the most intricate menu in the whole world. But they never tasted the food. So stop thinking, and then you can taste the food. Don't be a professor. Be someone who eats, who experiences these things. So after a while, you become silent. And in just those few moments of silence which you experience, and just while I was talking, when I stopped and put spaces between the words, you recognize that was beautiful, that was holy, that is of the essence of meditation. After a while, you recognize that silence so much, you realize it's far more valuable than all these thoughts and concepts. You recognize, why am I thinking so much and destroying this beautiful silence? Which is why one of the sayings you should keep in mind during this retreat
If you can't improve upon the silence, be quiet. Can you improve upon silence? You can't. Silence is truth. Silence is beauty. Silence is the place where all the wisdom comes from. So, value silence much more than thought. And then silence grows in you. You're doing walking meditation, and after a while, you find your mind is silent. There's nothing to think about. Why waste this time working out the meaning of life, when the meaning of life is what you experience when you shut up, when you're silent? Why trying to be a philosopher, where philosophers always go hungry, they just eat cardboard? What are you going to think about anyway? How much time have you wasted since you were born thinking? And where has it ever got you? Has it really solved the problems of your life? If it was, all the great thinkers would not need psychologists and counselors, and people like Chris would be out of a job. You don't need to think so much. In fact, we think 100 times more than necessary, and we're silent hardly ever. So in this retreat, you learn about silence, the space between the words, until you recognize it and feel so comfortable with it, until silence is even a closer friend than the present moment. So when silence comes to visit, you just grab them and have a beautiful long cup of tea together. No force, you just recognize each other. My beautiful friend, silent mind. We've had such wonderful times together in the past. Now we're going to hang out. Minutes, hours, who cares? Will you hang out with silence on the walking meditation path? So peaceful, so happy. There's nothing going on inside of you to torture you. Now this is how the Buddha compared thoughts to silence. It was a gross simile, it's maybe the grossest simile the Buddha could possibly imagine, just to make it quite clear. He said, just like a young man or a young girl were going out, you know, to some dance or some nightclub, and they'd be very well dressed in their best clothes, you know, to attract, you know, a person of the opposite gender. And imagine that their hair was just well done, the makeup was on, and a beautiful clean dress on. And imagine that then they discovered to their horror that someone had put on a necklace of the carcasses of dead stinky dogs around their neck. How would they feel when you've just, you know, been to the hairdresser's, got a really expensive hairdo, you got your best clothes washed and made up, and then someone puts stinky carcasses of dead dogs around your beautiful body? How would you feel? You'd be disgusted. You'd try and take it off as soon as possible and try and make sure that never happened again. And that is the Buddha simile for putting thoughts around your beautiful, peaceful mind. The carcasses of dead dogs. That's pretty intense. But that is actually very meaningful. The Buddha did not mince words. Why do you think so much? You have a beautiful, peaceful mind, and you tasted it a little bit a few moments ago when I was spaced between this beautiful silence. Why on earth do you put all these thoughts in there? Just conditioning, that's all. Well, conditioning is one reason. And the other thing, which I mentioned yesterday about why people can't be in the present moment, is fear. You're afraid of silence. A lot of times because we can't control it. A lot of fear is losing control. Ah, I'm not in control anymore, what's going to happen? I'm not at the wheel of the car. We're going to crash, I'm sure it's going to crash. Because I'm not driving.
Try it out and see. When you're silent, you don't crash. When you're moment, there's no accidents. It's when you're busy thinking about the future, that's when you have accidents and you trip up and you break your legs or whatever else you do. In this present moment, you are here and you're pretty safe. It's always when, I've seen that before, people are thinking about what somebody just said to them and they sort of trip over and just, you know, scratch themselves or bruise themselves because they're not here watching things when they're happening. And they're so busy thinking about the meaning of life, you know, they fall into the hole in the road. So, please, it's the safest place you can be. So why is it when you're quiet, you disturb it? One reason is fear. And underlying that fear, or rather associated with that fear, is we're not used to being silent. This is one of the reasons why we encourage people on this retreat to keep the noble silence. No speaking. But if anybody does talk, they just, the first couple of days, they're settling in. So give them a bit of break. But if they talk to you, you don't have to talk back. If they say, excuse me, where's the laundry? And you said to them, look, you're not supposed to be speaking. Then that's two of you have broken noble silence. So you're just as bad as they are. So if somebody starts speaking to you, what you should do, finger up to the mouth. That's all you need to do. You don't need to explain yourself. Where's the laundry? No, no, that's in that direction. But when you put the finger up, it's in front of your mouth, not in the other direction, okay? That's the only one finger sign you're allowed to do in this retreat. Just remember. No naughty stuff. So that just keeps people quiet. And if there's anybody who's constantly talking, especially sometimes in the common area, they're pretty good. But when they go into those cottages, they think that in their cottage, that is exempt from, you know, Jhana Grove Retreat Center. And they go, tat, talking about all the things which were said overnight. So even in the cottage, that's a no speaking zone. If you really need to have a talk, take someone and go out of the front gate, and outside you can talk. Such a long way. It's a steep hill up there. It's better. So no need to talk. And if there is someone in your cottage who's really talking a lot, and you've done this many times and it still doesn't work, please, you can come and ask Dania or myself. We've got the masking tape. And we put it around their mouth. We just leave a little hole in the centre for a straw so they can, you know, have some. We can. I'm sure that Bianca will be able to sort of puree the lunch so you'll be able to suck it through a straw. But that is what your the masking tape, if you really are just a hopeless case of speaking too much. But the first couple of days we feel so uncomfortable not speaking. That's why you have to get used to it. And after a while you get so comfortable in silence. You find I don't need to speak. And you can still be so much, have such good friendship with other people. You actually bond in the silence. Speaking, you usually upset each other. But in silence, a sense of bonding. So after retreats, when people have been silent together for such a long time, they feel such friendship together. So it's a wonderful way of fulfilling your social responsibilities to one another. Not by speaking, by being silent. And if you can do that, when the mouth isn't speaking, there's more opportunity for the brain to be quiet as well. It's actually the same mental muscles, not physical muscles, mental muscles. The same mental muscles move the mouth as move the brain into speech. So if you can quiet the speech, you are training the mental muscles so that they don't think so much. People who talk a lot will think a lot. People who talk little will think little. They will have more silence. Which is why the Buddha kept on saying, it is the small streams make all the noise.
The great rivers flow silently. So what are you? Are you a great river? Are you a small stream?
Doesn't say much about me, does it? Because I'll be speaking a lot to you. But I have to, that's my job.
So, on a walking path you develop this beautiful sense of silence. It just happens. But when it does come, respect it. When thoughts come, devalue them. And you just reflect, not think, but reflect. How many years have you been thinking? Are you wise yet? Have you solved the problems of the universe? You haven't even solved the problems of yourself. And how many other great thinkers have there been in this world? That's one of the inspirations I got from someone like Ajahn Chah. I've been through one of the great universities in this world, doing really, really well. And I thought I was so well trained academically and intellectually. I really thought I was smart because that's what the world was telling me. You got a great degree from Cambridge University. You're one of the smart guys. And then when I went to Northeast Thailand and met someone like Ajahn Chah, only 4 years at school. Now, we'd say he didn't even complete primary school. Now, the primary school was grade 7. He didn't even complete that. Only 4 years. Imagine putting yourself under a teacher who only finished grade 4 and then left school. Would you do that? Would you employ someone in your company when you ask them, how many years? Have you been in university? No, not university. High school? No. Did you finish primary school? No, I left after year 4. Which it means you wouldn't hire an Ajahn Chah. It came very clear to me just after a few days that I was stupid and that guy was smart. It's very embarrassing, you know, realizing you've been totally outwitted with all your degrees by a guy who didn't finish primary school. That really puts you in your place, way down there somewhere. Really great for you. I really appreciate that. But he was really smart and wise, and gee, what's going on? And that's where you start to understand all this thinking, which is what you learn in great universities. You learn how to think really well, and just to get rid of all the rubbish and think in a straight line and think powerfully, think deep, and get these amazing ideas. That made you so stupid. But there's a guy who stopped thinking. He sat there and could see things. So that's where you started to take away the value of thinking. That's how to stop thinking. Not using force. If you try to stop thinking by holding yourself with force, again you just get tense, headaches, and it doesn't work. After a while the thoughts just increase their power, they just burst in, you've got more thoughts than ever. What happens is sometimes people do these meditation retreats and their thinking just goes wild. I mean, it really just goes bizarre. Thought, and they can hardly stop it. Why? Because they've been trying to stop it. The force has been feeding them. Instead, we use this wisdom power. You see through thoughts. They're just not really important. They're just like a con game. They promise you the truth. And they just lead to more thoughts. There's no end to them. They keep going on and on and on with never any end in sight, no solution. And it means you're not seeing the world. You're just eating the menu. You're seeing the signposts, not really the things. So after a while, you take the value away from thinking. You really demean the thoughts. You start looking upon them like the carcasses of dead dogs around your beautiful, peaceful, wise mind. They stop wisdom. They stop your understanding. They don't create wisdom. They are the enemy of wisdom. Silence becomes the source of seeing. And you start valuing silence so much, it starts to grow in you. You become the silent sage. Look how wise this teddy bear is. Hasn't spoken a word for about a year when he first came to Jhana Grove. And that's what I call a meditator.
never complains, never moves from this seat, sits all day and all night in teddy bear jhana. We call his practice, you know what the teddy bear practice, call it bear awareness. You must have seen that one coming. Anyway, keep. That's why I laugh at my own jokes. I don't care if you like them. I enjoy them. I think they're funny. So, be silent. And cultivate that silence. Generate that silence. Revere that silence. Worship the silence. Worship the silence more than you worship a Buddha. I know that some of you come in here and you bow to this and bow to that. How about bowing to silence? Worshipping it so much. And if somebody came in here and kicked the Buddha statue, or they threw sort of vomit on it, how would you feel? You can't do that to a Buddha! Try respecting silence that way. Silence is sacred. So you don't allow people to throw rubbish over silence. None of these thoughts. And if you revere and value silence that much, there's no effort required. It just happens. You're silent a lot. This is one of the truths of the mind. What it values, what it thinks important, is what will occupy its space more than anything else. If you value the future and think it's really important, you won't be able to stop the future coming into your mind. If you value the past and think this past, it really needs to be paid attention to. I really need to figure out why this happened and what happened and why it happened. If you value it, it will take precedence and it will enter your mind and stay. If you value the present moment, if you really value it more than the past and the future, then it stays. It's not force. It's not intention. It's wisdom. It's understanding. Using your wisdom power, present moment stays. If you really understand that silence is so important, it's so sacred, it's beautiful, then it will stay. You recognize it. And it's also to recognize its beauty, its happiness. Because that's what occurs when you're in the present moment. Oh, you feel just so much of a relief. You do feel free, you feel happy at last. I don't have to worry about the future. I don't have to keep all these things which went wrong in the past. I don't need to keep bothering my mind. I'm now happy. I'm free. It is the happiness of going on holiday. No more work. No more phones. Nothing. Hey, I'm free. This is my holiday. You feel happy when you go on holiday. This is a holiday from the past and the future. And when you really get into the silence, it's so beautiful. It's so attractive. It's lovely. Just like saying a young man sees a beautiful girl or a girl sees a really hot boy. You can't take your eyes off him. Why? Because it's attractive. The attractiveness creates a one-pointedness. Sustained attention, the stillness on the object. So once you really appreciate the sheer beauty of silence, just how wonderful it is, delightful. Then it stays. And you can't wait to have more moments of stillness. Not force, wisdom. Appreciating its beauty, appreciating that this is the path to nirvana and meditation and happiness and peace and wisdom and everything you ever wanted. Appreciating that, and then it stays. If you still have a lot of trouble becoming quiet. Sometimes, if you can't just stop all in one go, you can have stepping stones, halfway houses, in between thinking and silence. Because a lot of times, that's my job to give you all these skillful means to take you into that silence so you can appreciate it, so you don't need any stepping stones anymore. Stepping stone number one, I mentioned yesterday. Go outside this room outside your bedroom into nature. There's a beautiful full moon last night. If you watch the full moon, you stop thinking. It's just too beautiful. It just occupies your mind with the beauty of the present moment. You watch the stars. You see the lights at night in the distance. You see Rockingham in that direction. You watch the trees. You watch the birds. And you feel the warm sun on your face. And you taste the tea in your mouth. So many of these natural phenomena bring you into the present moment. They're just delightful out there. So if you really are having a hard time being in the present or being silent, go for a walk in nature. This property has got a fence all the way around it, so you can't get too far lost. Just if you do get lost, find the fence and just walk around it until you come back to the gate. You're perfectly safe. And if you do get lost, but just assume you're sitting under a tree somewhere in Jhana for 3 days, so we won't send out a search party for you. We don't want to disturb your 3 days of Jhana under the tree. Just go there and enjoy yourself. You'll find your way back. Be in this moment. One thing which I do sometimes in walking meditation, go for a walk with no plan on where you're going to go. Just one step at a time. You walk, and once this one step is finished, only then do you decide to veer left, to veer right, to go straight on, or to turn around again. Because so many times people go for a walk and they've got an idea where they're going to get to. I'm going to walk around the property. I'm going to walk to the dam. I'm going to walk to the gate. I'm going to walk to Bodhinyana Monastery. No, don't have such hard plans. I'm going to walk in this direction and see what happens. A little bit longer. Now, see what I'm going to do next. So go for a walk with no destination. It's amazing what you discover then. You discover parts of this property which you've never been to before. We'll let you know there is actually a secret Buddha garden somewhere in this property. It's a beautiful little Buddha statue there, a little garden. See if you can find it. You'll never find it by looking for it. You'll only find it if you wander and get lost, and then you will find it. So, there's all these little things around the place just to help you with your meditation. So just learn how to be, and learn how to be silent. Because people can go for a walk, and they can think of so many things when they're going for a walk, and waste the opportunity. So walking meditation in nature. Number two, if still that doesn't work, the much coarser way, but it does work, is doing a mantra. The mantra can be anything at all. You can be used what they do in Indonesia. The Buddhists, they always do Namo Buddhaya. It's a little mantra. It means like homage to the Buddha. So, Na, space, Mo, Bud, Ga, Ya. You chant that to yourself with spaces between the syllables. That's the most important, spaces between the syllables. If you are Mahayana Buddha, Buddhist from the Pure Land, Amitofo, Amitofo. Because in those spaces between the syllables, that's where you have silence. If you can't hold the silence that long, Amitofo. Shorten the gaps. If you prefer Vajrayana, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, that's not the way to chant. Om Mani Padme Hum. Put spaces between the words. If you're thinking a lot, close the spaces down. Om, Mani, Padme, Hum. Because that blocks out the thoughts by what the Buddha calls substitution. It's one of the first methods of calming the thoughts in Vitakka Santata Sutta. Calming the thoughts down by blocking them out with one set of words you keep saying to yourself over and over and over again, but spaces in between. And as you get calmed down, lengthen the spaces. If you get agitated, close the spaces down. More calm, lengthen the spaces. Lengthen, lengthen, lengthen until it's Om. And there never is a Mani because you're quiet. That's another skillful means of calming the thinking mind down. It is a bit more aggressive, but it does work. But again, it will only work when you really want to be silent, and you only want to be silent because you value silence, and you take away the value of thinking and conceptualizing and labeling, when you realize the menu is not the food and you stop eating menus. Then you are quiet. So that's what you do when you're sitting. That's what you do when you're walking meditation. Doesn't matter how long you walk, backwards and forwards, no time. When you're finished, you're finished. When you feel it's enough, finish it. And I'll give more instructions later on, because this is only day two, and there's more to come yet. But already, present moment awareness and silence. See if you can cultivate that, and you'll be getting a long way into meditation. So that is the instructions for today. Any questions about silence and present moment? Good. You can always put them on a piece of paper, but because there were so many questions last night, one question, one person. So you're only allowed one question per person tonight. And by one question, I don't mean part A, part B, part C, part D. One question means one question. So if you put a question in the box and later on this evening you think, no, I've got a much better question, take the old question out and delete that one. So you can put in a new question. And I have returned the dummy over to the table over there for the person who donated it. So you can always take that one back. Or if it's not God, if anybody really needs it, they can always use that to give to the person in their cottage who's talking too much. If they really are upsetting you, put it outside their room as a reminder that they should be more, they need a pacifier somehow or other. Okay, so now we have interviews. So there is a sheet of paper in the corridor between the offices and the dining room, and there you can put your names on. But please put your name, the first one at the top and the next one underneath. Please don't put one at the top, one at the bottom, one in the middle. That means I have to keep waiting for you, which is really disrespectful. So remember, just one after the other, and it's only 10 minutes each. I will take this with me. If you go over to... No, I won't. But you get the idea. It's just 10 minutes. So understand what you're going to say. Say it. And this is not like counseling, you know, you for your problems in your boyfriends and girlfriends and your parents and your children and your life. You know, this is not free care. If you want to do that, go and get a counselor. You know, they just, I know they cost a lot of money. You get this for free. But, you know, that's life. So this is about your meditation and the practice of Buddhism here. So please keep it to the meditation. Okay, so now, those of you not coming on interviews, you can come and have a cup of tea, and you can do walking meditation, be in the present moment, cultivate silence in whatever posture you're in. Lunchtime, remember, one spoon at a time, see what happens. Little by little, you become a friend to the present moment and a friend to silence. And then you have a wonderful time. So please enjoy.